The Project Gutenberg A Text of Duty Obscure by Thomas Hardy. Part 1st, at Mary Green. Yea, many there be that have run out of their wits for women, and become servants for their sakes. Many also have perished, have erred, and sinned, for women. O ye men, how can it be but women should be strong, seeing they do thus? Esdras. The schoolmaster was leaving the village, and everybody seemed sorry. The miller at Crescombe lent him the small white tilted cart and horse, to carry his goods to the city of his destination, about 20 miles off, such a vehicle proving of quite sufficient size for the departing teacher's effects. For the schoolhouse had been partly furnished by the managers, and the only cumbersome article possessed by the master, in addition to the packing case of books, was a cottage piano that he had bought at an auction during the year in which he thought of learning instrumental music. But the enthusiasm having waned, he had never acquired any skill in playing, and the purchased article had been a perpetual trouble to him ever since in moving house. The rector had gone away for the day, being a man who disliked the sight of changes. He did not mean to return till the evening, when the new school teacher would have arrived and settled in, and everything would be smooth again. The blacksmith, the farm bailiff, and the schoolmaster himself were standing in perplexed attitudes in the parlor before the instrument. The master had remarked that even if he got it into the cart, he should not know what to do with it on his arrival at Christminster, the city he was bound for, since he was only going into temporary lodgings just at first. A little boy of 11, who had been thoughtfully assisting in the packing, joined the group of men, and as they rubbed their chins he spoke up, blushing at the sound of his own voice. "And have got a great fuel house, and it could be put there, perhaps, till you found a place to settle in, sir." "A proper good notion," said the blacksmith. It was decided that a deputation should wait on the boys and an old maiden resident, and ask her if she would house the piano till Mr. Phillotson should send for it. The smith and the bailiff started to see about the practicability of the suggested shelter, and the boy and the schoolmaster were left standing alone. "Sorry I am going, Jude?" asked the latter kindly. Tears rose into the boy's eyes, for he was not among the regular day scholars, who came unromantically close to the schoolmaster's life, but one who had attended the night school only during the present teacher's term of office. The regular scholars, if the truth must be told, stood at the present moment afar off, like certain historic disciples, indisposed to any enthusiastic volunteering of aid. The boy awkwardly opened the book he held in his hand, which Mr. Phillotson had bestowed on him as a parting gift, and admitted that he was sorry. "So am I," said Mr. Phillotson. "Why do you go, sir?" asked the boy. "Ah, that would be a long story. You wouldn't understand my reasons, Jude. You will, perhaps, when you are older." "I think I should now, sir." "Well, don't speak of this everywhere. You know what a university is, and a university degree? It is the necessary hallmark of a man who wants to do anything in teaching. My scheme, or dream, is to be a university graduate, and then to be ordained. By going to live at Christminster, or near it, I shall be at headquarters, so to speak, and if my scheme is practicable at all, I consider that being on the spot will afford me a better chance of carrying it out than I should have elsewhere." The smith and his companion returned. Old Miss Folly's fuel house was dry, and eminently practicable, and she seemed willing to give the instrument standing room there. It was accordingly left in the school till the evening, when more hands would be available for removing it, and the schoolmaster gave a final glance round. The boy Jude assisted in loading some small articles, and at 9 o'clock Mr. Phillotson mounted beside his box of books and other impedimenta, and bade his friends goodbye. "I shan't forget you, Jude," he said, smiling, as the cart moved off. "Be a good boy, remember, and be kind to animals and birds, and read all you can. And if ever you come to Christminster, remember you hunt me out for old acquaintance sake. The cart creaked across the green, and disappeared round the corner by the rectory house. The boy returned to the draw well at the edge of the greensward, where he had left his buckets, when he went to help his patron and teacher in the loading. There was a quiver in his lip now, and after opening the well cover to begin lowering the bucket he paused, and leant with his forehead and arms against the framework, his face wearing the fixity of a thoughtful child who has felt the pricks of life somewhat before his time. The well into which he was looking was as ancient as the village itself, and from his present position appeared as a long circular perspective ending in a shining disk of quivering water at a distance of 100 feet down. There was a lining of green moss near the top, and nearer still the hart's tongue fern. He said to himself, in the melodramatic tones of a whimsical boy, that the schoolmaster had drawn at that well scores of times on a morning like this, and would never draw there any more. I've seen him look down into it, when he was tired with his drawing, just as I do now, and when he rested a bit, before carrying the buckets home. But he was too clever to bide here any longer a small sleepy place like this. A tear rolled from his eye into the depths of the well. The morning was a little foggy, and the boy's breathing unfurled itself as a thicker fog upon the still and heavy air. His thoughts were interrupted by a sudden outcry. Bring on that water, will ye, you idle young harlequin. It came from an old woman who had emerged from her door towards the garden gate of a green-thatched cottage not far off. The boy quickly waved a signal of assent, drew the water with what was a great effort for one of his stature, landed and emptied the big bucket into his own pair of smaller ones, and pausing a moment for breath, started with them across the patch of clammy greensward whereon the well stood nearly in the center of the little village, or rather hamlet of Mary Green. It was as old-fashioned as it was small, and it rested in the lap of an undulating upland adjoining the North Wessex Downs. Old as it was, however, the well shaft was probably the only relic of the local history that remained absolutely unchanged. Many of the thatched and dormer dwelling houses had been pulled down of late years, and many trees felled on the green. Above all, the original church, humpbacked, wood-turreted, and quaintly hipped, had been taken down, and either cracked up into heaps of road metal in the lane, or utilized as pigsty walls, garden seats, guard stones to fences, and rockeries in the flower beds of the neighborhood. In place of it, a tall new building of modern Gothic design, unfamiliar to English eyes, had been erected on a new piece of ground by a certain obliterator of historic records who had run down from London and back in a day. The site whereon so long had stood the ancient temple to the Christian divinities was not even recorded on the green and level grass plot that had immemorially been the churchyard, the obliterated graves being commemorated by 18-penny cast iron crosses warranted to last 5 years. Too slender as was Jude Folly's frame, he bore the two brimming house buckets of water to the cottage without resting. Over the door was a little rectangular piece of blue board, on which was painted in yellow letters, Drusilla Folly, Baker. Within the little lead panes of the window, this being one of the few old houses left, were 5 bottles of sweets, and 3 buns on a plate of the willow pattern. While emptying the buckets at the back of the house, he could hear an animated conversation in progress within doors between his great-aunt, the Drusilla of the signboard, and some other villagers. Having seen the schoolmaster depart, they were summing up particulars of the event, and indulging in predictions of his future. And who's he? Asked one, comparatively a stranger, when the boy entered. Well, ye med ask it, Mrs. Williams. He's my great-nephew come since he was last this way. The old inhabitant who answered was a tall, gaunt woman, who spoke tragically on the most trivial subject, and gave a phrase of her conversation to each auditor in turn. He come from Millstock, down in South Wessex, about a year ago, worse luck for N, Belinda, turning to the right, here his father was living, and was took by the shakings for death, and died in 2 days, as you know. Caroline, turning to the left, I it would have been a blessing, if God Almighty had took thee to, why thy mother and father, poor useless boy. But I've got him here to stay with me till I can see what's to be done with un, though I am obliged to let him earn any penny he can. Just now he's a scaring of birds for Farmer Trotham. It keeps him out of mischty. Why do ye turn away, Jude? She continued, as the boy, feeling the impact of their glances like slaps upon his face, moved aside. The local washerwoman replied that it was perhaps a very good plan of Miss, or Mrs. Follies as they called her indifferently, to have him with her O'Kippy company in your loneliness. Fetch water, shet the winder, shet her o' nights, and help in the bit o' baking. Miss Folly doubted it. Why didn't he get the schoolmaster to take e to Christminster Y.N., and make a scholar of e, she continued, in frowning pleasantry. I'm sure he couldn't ha took a better one. The boy is crazy for books, that he is. It runs in our family rather. His cousin Sue is just the same, so I've heard. But I have not seen the child for years, though she was born in this place, within these four walls, as it happened. My niece and her husband, after they were married, didn't get a house of their own for some year or more, and then they only had one till, well, I won't go into that. Jude, my child, don't you ever marry. Tisn't for the Follies to take that step anymore. She, their only one, was like a child o' my own, Belinda, till the split come. Ah, that a little maid should know such changes. Jude, finding the general attention again centering on himself, went out to the bakehouse, where he ate the cake provided for his breakfast. The end of his spare time had now arrived, and emerging from the garden, by getting over the hedge at the back he pursued a path northward, till he came to a wide and lonely depression in the general level of the upland, which was sown as a cornfield. This vast concave was the scene of his labors for Mr. Trotham the farmer, and he descended into the midst of it. The brown surface of the field went right up towards the sky all round, where it was lost by degrees in the mist that shut out the actual verge and accentuated the solitude. The only marks on the uniformity of the scene were a rick of last year's produce standing in the midst of the arable, the rooks that rose at his approach, and the path athwart the fallow by which he had come, trodden now by he hardly knew whom, though once by many of his own dead family. How ugly it is here, he murmured. The fresh harrow line seemed to stretch like the channelings in a piece of new corduroy, lending a meanly utilitarian air to the expanse, taking away its gradations, and depriving it of all history beyond that of the few recent months, though to every clod and stone there really attached associations enough, and to spare echoes of songs from ancient harvest days, of spoken words, and of sturdy deeds. Every inch of ground had been the site, first or last, of energy, gaiety, horseplay, bickerings, weariness. Groups of gleaners had squatted in the sun on every square yard. Love matches that had populated the adjoining hamlet had been made up there between reaping and carrying. Under the hedge which divided the field from a distant plantation, girls had given themselves to lovers who would not turn their heads to look at them by the next harvest, and in that ancient cornfield many a man had made love promises to a woman at whose voice he had trembled by the next seed time, after fulfilling them in the church adjoining. But this neither Jude nor the rooks around him considered. For them it was a lonely place, possessing, in the one view, only the quality of a work ground, and in the other that of a granary good to feed in. The boy stood under the rick before mentioned, and every few seconds used his clacker or rattle briskly. At each clack the rooks left off pecking, and rose and went away on their leisurely wings, burnished like tassets of mail, afterwards wheeling back and regarding him warily, and descending to feed at a more respectful distance. He sounded the clacker till his arm ached, and at length his heart grew sympathetic with the bird's thwarted desires. They seemed, like himself, to be living in a world which did not want them. Why should he frighten them away? They took upon more and more the aspect of gentle friends, and pensioners the only friends he could claim as being in the least degree interested in him, for his aunt had often told him that she was not. He ceased his rattling, and they lighted anew. "Poor little dears," said Jude, aloud. "Who shall have some dinner? You shall. There is enough for us all. Farmer Trotham can afford to let you have some. Eat, then, my dear little birdies, and make a good meal." They stayed and ate, inky spots on the nut-brown soil, and Jude enjoyed their appetite. A magic thread of fellow feeling united his own life with theirs. Puny and sorry as those lives were, they much resembled his own. His clacker he had by this time thrown away from him, as being a mean and sordid instrument, offensive both to the birds, and to himself as their friend. All at once he became conscious of a smart blow upon his buttocks, followed by a loud clack, which announced to his surprised senses that the clacker had been the instrument of offense used. The birds and Jude started up simultaneously, and the dazed eyes of the latter beheld the farmer in person, the great Trotham himself, his red face glaring down upon Jude's cowering frame, the clacker swinging in his hand. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.